And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest. The 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 to Noon Show. It's the midweek one. It's Wednesday, the 25th of September at 9:04. Thanks so much for choosing Highland Radio. We really appreciate your support and your company, and we want you involved in the conversation. We've got loads lined up on the show today, and we want you texting in your views or raising your own topics or issues, whatever you want to talk about. 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. You can WhatsApp voice notes to it as well. If you want to contact us from outside the Republic, it's 00353 87 60 25000. If you want to give us a telephone call, it's 07491 25000, and your emails come into us at the usual address. It's comments@highlandradio.com. The Finn Valley Voice is today, just after celebrating 30 years in circulation. And just to remind you, there's a podcast interview with Slee McGlynn from the paper as part of Business Matters. It's in our listen back section if you're interested. But their lead story today: Donegal publicans demand 9% VAT rate. Job losses in independently run bars are becoming one of the most significant casualties of the high VAT rate on hospitality, according to members of the Donegal Vintners Association meeting recently in Cheers Bar, Ballybuffet. And you can read much more about that on the front of and inside that paper today. Obviously, everybody knows at this point we're in the midst of a housing crisis, so it's kind of startling to read that there's 50,000 apartments that are greenlit from a planning perspective that are not going to construction in Dublin. Construction work has not yet started on over 50,000 apartments that have been planning or that have planning permission in Dublin, according to new figures published by the four local authorities in the city. They show that building apartments in Dublin has largely become commercially unfeasible, as construction costs are now higher than what buyers are willing to pay. And this really, I think, is quite interesting. I have no interest in construction or property ownership as such, but this is the elephant in the room here. Who actually pulls the string? Who's in charge of property development? Is it the government? Is it the banks? Is it the people? Or is it the construction companies? Because they are able to say, and I'm not saying this is what's happening, but they are able to say, right, you need the houses. We're the people that build them. The planning permission is there, but there's not enough money in the apartment. So what comes next? What comes next? This is just in the lead up to a budget. Is it further tax break for construction? Is that what's required? I don't know. Or is this maybe contractors holding out to get as much money as they possibly can? But it goes to show that regardless of any plans that might be there in the current setup, it is actually really the contractors and the companies that determine housing delivery and not the state. In many cases, certainly in and around Dublin, they cost more apartments to construct when you take in all the costs, including the land, than you actually sell them for, said Bryn Griffiths, vice chair of the Quantity Surveyors Group within the Society of Chartered Surveyors Ireland. There's definitely a viability equation that isn't stacking up. It wasn't helped by the nearest rate, the interest rate increase in the last few years. From a construction cost point of view, we saw rapid inflation in 2021 and 2022 that has cooked, but it is still going up. What it isn't doing is falling. So, as I say, there's a bit of a standoff here, and it's just going to be interesting to do with an upcoming budget. If the government says, right, we need these guys to build these houses, what can we do to incentivise them? And that's where the control lies, I think, but I could be wrong. The slimmed down hate crime bill will retain special protection for transgender and non-binary people, the Department of Justice has said. This is in the Irish Times. The government has confirmed that it intends to shelve the controversial hate speech elements of the bill, but the hate crime legislation, which provides for tougher sentences for crimes such as assault that are motivated by hatred, is expected to be brought before the Dáil in the coming weeks. And there's been an awful lot of conversation about the hate speech rules. They're off the table now. So this is separate. This is hate crime. A spokesperson for Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, confirmed to the newspaper yesterday that the definition of gender contained in the original bill would remain. Unease over these aspects of the bill among backbenchers was one of the things that caused the government to rethink its approach. Now, I mean, people have different views about someone, say, for instance, that is transgender. And those conversations are ongoing and will continue to be ongoing. But I don't think anyone really would like to see someone being beaten up for that reason. So in other words, it would just be a regular assault if it wasn't motivated by, say, for instance, someone being transgender. That would make it a hate crime. So I don't think anyone would... Is anyone opposed to sort of that being in the bill, that someone gets could get assaulted for that particular reason? Anti-discrimination laws have established protected characteristics. They are race, colour, nationality, religion, national ethnic origin, descent, gender, sex characteristics, sexual orientation and disability. And those protections are expected extended in the hate crime legislation. The legislation provides for tougher sentences for crimes which show hatred motivated by these protected characteristics. Or maybe some might say that is also a one foot in the hate speech camp. I don't know. I don't know enough. Well, I know plenty about it, but as I say, I don't know enough about what's actually published to be able to tease it out any further. This is potentially good news for future road developments. We know there's a lot of roads needed in Donegal, the 10T bypasses and all that kind of stuff. And there has been a bit of resistance from the Greens to fund some of these roads or equate it to then spending on sustainable travel and public transport and what have you. It seems that Minister Eamon Ryan, though, is being sidestepped now. And around $6 million in funding for roads is being found. Funds the Green Minister had refused to sanction, the Irish Daily Mail can reveal. The major road projects that had been through the tendering process had been paused as they were not being adequately funded to proceed. Speaking to the Irish Daily Mail in New York this week, Mr. Ryan was adamant that no new funding would be allocated until January next year. However, in a dramatic turnaround, the Mail can reveal that within 24 hours of the Minister's remarks, Transport Infrastructure Ireland has now found the funding to finance four of the 10 roads in the pipeline. I'll go to page four here. Ryan viewed as a political, politically embarrassing after he definitely ruled out roads funding just one day previously. Also comes as rows intensify over the government again launching its own spending rule in the budget. So as I say, it relates to some current roads that have gone to tender, but it might bode well for those who like roads into the future. The awful scenes in the Middle East continue overnight. Chaos strikes a gridlocked highway yesterday as tens of thousands flee southern Lebanon after another barrage of deadly Israeli missiles. This is the Irish Daily Mirror. Dozens were killed in overnight raids, including two UN staff, a day after 492 people lost their lives. Roads in the town of Damour, 20 kilometres south of capital Beirut, were blocked as families headed north, many crammed into trucks and also sat on top of vehicles. Israeli strikes on the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza reportedly resulted in deaths and injuries, including children. The attacks came as Ireland urged the US to stop supplying weapons to Israel while calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, the tarnished has said. And at the same time, and this is not a reflection on, this is not necessarily, I'm not talking about who's good and who's bad in this situation, whether you support Israel, whether you support the Lebanese, or whether you support Russia, or whether you support Ukraine. But we have a situation whereby, you know, I was watching a video yesterday and I don't understand it and I don't understand the state of humanity, and maybe I'm a outlier in this, but there was a video opportunity for the press yesterday in America whereby politicians were signing bombs. And I've seen the Russians do this as well, and I've seen Israelis do this also, by the way. So this, as I say, it's not about any particular group. It's about humanity. That it's a press call for people to stand around signing their names on bombs. And many of these bombs are launched pretty indiscriminately and blowing children to bits and robbing them of any future that they may have and killing innocents. And you've got people in suits, and they were in suits and they are often in suits, gloating and signing their names on these bombs. I don't care who you're for. Is there not something fundamentally inhumane about that? That you're standing there gleefully signing something that could very easily and often does rob children and women of their lives. I mean, there's a different argument if it's against, you know, combatants. I still don't think it's very humane at all, to be honest with you. But just as a press conference there in a civilized state signing bombs, to me, it seems very unfortunate, to say the very least, and something this world needs to be moving away from, I would have thought. The Irish Daily Star this morning. New pictures of the half-finished National Children's Hospital were released last night as Sinn Féin blasted the government for not taking responsibility for ballooning costs and delays. And it also came as confidential report cast doubt on the operational readiness of the hospital, claiming the management teams to run the facility are not in place. This is something I was referencing yesterday. The pictures were released by the National Paediatric Hospital Development Board ahead of its appearance at the Oireachtas Health Committee today. They showed large parts of the hospital, which will have over 6,000 rooms when finished, have yet to be completed. This included several snaps of the inside of the hospital where work is still underway. So the hospital's not finished. Okay. And the problem now is that there is a difficulty in whether or not the management teams are in place to actually run it when it is being run. And there is supposed to be some preparedness going on at the moment from people within the health service. And I'm dumbing it down a little bit because I don't fully understand it. But basically what I believe it to be is those who are responsible for perhaps getting this hospital ready for use and putting in the measures that would be required are so busy in the health system currently that they're not able to focus on that work. And that will be revealed a little bit more in today's Oireachtas hearings. And there's another story about overspending here in the Star. It's right next to that story. Over a third of the €336,000 cost of the infamous Leinster House bike shelter was spent on steelworks. The Oireachtas Commission, which oversees the running of Leinster House, was yesterday given a cost breakdown of the shed, which can store 36 bikes. But it doesn't. It might store them, but it doesn't protect them from the elements. It heard that €121,000 was spent on steel and that the cost of the granite was in the region of €45,000. The OPW said surveying work amounted to €11,000, while the outer work on the shelter came in at €11,000. Wow, that's a lot of money for not much steel. Maybe steel's that price at the moment, I don't know. We're joined on the programme now by adult education teacher with Donegal ETB, Finn McGeehan. Good morning to you, Finn. Thanks so much for your time today.
Good morning, and thank you, Greg.
Right, OK. Now, we've spoken in the past on this programme in relation to what was described as poor conditions experienced by teachers in the adult education sector. A new contract was then agreed with unions and the department and was activated by Donegal ETB. But there's more to this story. So just to catch listeners up, if you don't mind, Finn, what were the problems last year and how far did this new contract go to address those problems?
Okay, thank you, Greg. So the problem was, well, the problem, the state of the contracts before that tutors or teachers in the adult education sector were on part-time contracts. However, they were doing full-time work. And the terms and conditions were positively Victorian. I mean, we weren't being paid bank holidays. We were getting very little holiday pay. There was hardly any sick pay. It was, we were only being paid, also being paid contact time. That is to say that if you're not an educator, you're not paid for the preparation time, all the time that, you know, that we work that people don't see. You know, like, so for example, for every hour you stand in a classroom, you spend at least 45 minutes, if not another hour, for every hour's in. So a contract was agreed with the Department of Further Education. And this contract put us onto a proper pay scale gave us, you know, like, much better, much, much better terms and conditions. However, these terms and conditions weren't perfect. You know, like, it was a point of departure more than anything. You know, like, it did afford us a much better rate. But however, it was, you know, like, it did kind of like punish people who were already on permanent contracts. You know, like, the pensions were, you know, like, there was a lack of clarity over the pensions. You know, like, you might as well have been reading Finnegan's Wake. You couldn't understand a thing.
So it wasn't necessarily for everyone. There were some improvements. It wasn't perfect, but it was better than what was there in the first instance. And before we go on to the next stage of this story, Finn, again, for those who may not be aware, and I have to make sure I'm included in that as well, what would your typical adult education teacher role be? Like, who are they working with? In what environments are they working?
Now, we often work out of centres, you know, like, so Donegal BTB, I think it has about, you know, like a 5 or 6 areas. And, you know, like we have centres like in Gort the Hork, and then there's one Donegal Town, Buncrana, Letterkenny, Stranorlar as well. And we also work in outreach as well, like where we rent rooms and, you know, like tutors travel to places where, you know, like, especially I work, for example, in Gidore in West Donegal, and there's a fair bit of travel involved. Okay. And we often work with the more vulnerable, more marginalized people in society, adults who may have had poor experiences with their educational institutions in the past, people from marginalized communities, with refugees. This is our purpose is to help people reintegrate and you know, like to create them a path to, you know, like to employment and self-fulfillment.
Yes, and inclusion in society. If there were literacy skills or maybe they went through difficult times through their schooling or what have you, I get you. Right, so the contract was agreed with the unions and the department, and Donegal ETB activated this agreement. But it's now been frozen. What's going on there?
Now, it was frozen. Now, we in September, when we all turned up to work on the 2nd of September, we were guaranteed that we were on the clock, so to speak. There, you know, those are the words of our adult education officer who chaired the meeting. We were explained, we were told about the all the details of the pay structure, and that we could expect our first salaries in October. Now, on Monday morning, we all got an email stating, in no uncertain terms, a very cold email, I might add, that there were problems with our payroll system, our PLSS system, that Donegal ETB had problems aligning to the national system, because all ETBs are connected nationally, and there had been no guarantee of funding from SOLAS, which is the state agency which is responsible for adult education, and from the Department of Higher Education.
That is more significant. I mean, obviously you would hope if there were technical issues that they could be ironed out, that could be temporary, but no commitment of funding from SOLAS seems to undermine the potential for this agreement altogether.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I agree with you. I mean, like, I my aim here today is just to throw light on this problem, because I think we're being provided with very, very, you know, very, very vague and generic responses. You know, like, and being a teacher, I'm very, very good at spotting an excuse. You know, like by now, you know.
So what does this mean then for adult education teachers? I mean, some of them could have realigned their lives to take account of their improved conditions. I don't know if that's a typical or an extreme example, but in any case, they would have been anticipating better terms and indeed, by the sounds of it, conditions. So what impact then is this having on teachers?
Now, I'll talk for myself. I can only talk for myself here. I've been forced now back onto the old hourly rate, and my hours in the meantime have been cut. And this is going to entail that I personally am going to face hardship this winter. I am going to struggle making a car repayment. I am going to struggle with my young child. It is absolutely, sorry for the emotion there, but, you know, this is my family, and this is not just me. This is replicated all around the country. This is absolutely unacceptable and disgraceful.
Why were your hours cut?
They say, like, apparently their budget cuts have been made.
Okay.
And no other, and I haven't had any other, any other explanation.
So instead of having an income that is more steady, hopefully improved and more predictable, you've actually been told now, effectively from Monday, that you not only are going backwards, but you're going backwards further, that your hours are being cut. You are only being paid for your contact hours, of course. You're actually in a worse situation than you were before all of this began. And yet you're facing into an autumn and winter of discontent, having to meet all the responsibilities that many of us do have to meet.
Yes, you know, like it really beggars belief. You know, like it's going backwards. It's I have no words, Greg.
You mentioned a couple of words earlier on in this conversation as it relates to those that you work with, vulnerable and marginalised. It does sound, from what I'm hearing, that it's actually now yourself, Vin, and your colleagues that are vulnerable and marginalised.
The irony of it, Greg, the irony of it, yeah. Because I could have accepted, you know, like several very, very solid offers of work this summer. And I passed them up to work here, to only to be punched in the gut, figuratively.
What next then? What course of action do you have? Is this a unique situation between teachers here and Donegal ETB, or is it being replicated with ETBs across the country?
To my knowledge, in at least six ETBs, including Cork ETB, Cavan Monaghan ETB, and I can't remember the
That's
rest.
That's fine. No, in other words, it's not unique to here. So no. What has Sulla said about this then? And what are your unions doing about this?
Well, our unions are, you know, like I know that the unions are engaging as we speak. And I would also encourage all tutors, if you're not a member of a union, join a union of your choice. Your voice will be amplified within the union. They have the legal people. They have the, you know, like the negotiators, you know, like you're better off here. So the unions are engaging, but let's hope that we can manage to resolve this as promptly as possible, because, you know, like not having money in winter is not good.
I just hope that, you know, obviously, you're highly trained, qualified professionals doing a highly qualified professional job. But obviously, because you do work with those who are vulnerable, there's an element of passion, as there is in all teaching. I hope that's not being exploited, that this is being seen as some sort of a devotion and you'll do it anyway. I mean, I would find it very difficult. It would be only the care of the people that I'm working with. I would find it very hard to motivate myself to prepare myself for contact time with my clients or students or however you might call it, with this two-fingered salute from the state.
Yeah, I think you're pretty much spot on there, Greg. You know, it is, you know, like, you know, you'd expect better. You expect much better from our institutions, you know, like, you know, like, you know, like this republic was founded on very, very sound values. You know, like, I think, you know, like our legislators and our decision makers have to go back, you know, like, and do a bit of soul searching here. Not on just this issue, you know, there are many issues, you know.
Yeah, but this is the one that perhaps is more easy for most of us outside of you know, the adult teaching sector to get our heads around. Yeah. If anyone is affected by this or wants to join the campaign, aeto2021@gmail.com. And I'd be interested to hear from other adult education teachers on this as well. And Finn, you know, like, you shouldn't find yourself in this position. Do you know, maybe the, you know, things looked brighter and now to have the rug pulled onto your, like this, you and many others on Monday with, as you described, a cold email and facing into, you know, I'm presuming you get no other supports elsewhere, given the work, and now you have this insult to injury, it must feel. Finn, thanks for helping us understand. We'll make our contacts, of course, with the relevant departments to see if they can cast any light on this funding shortfall in this incredibly, amazingly rich country that we have.
Yeah, there's 13 billion that we didn't want there. Wow. So
I'd say you have a hole for that.
Yeah. Okay. Burning a hole in our pockets.
All right, Finn, thanks very much, buddy. I appreciate
it. Thank you very much, Greg.
That's Finn McGeehan there, who is a adult education teacher with Donegal ETB, and they find themselves in a very difficult situation. As I say, if you're a colleague of Finn's and you want to tell your story and add, I suppose, more weight to the campaign, please get in touch with us. We're going to be talking a little later on about a huge amount of funding for sports clubs. It really is, you know, incredibly generous, it has to be said. 13-odd million and some big bucks going to a lot of sporting organisations around the county. And we'll celebrate that, as we've always committed to. You know, when there's good news, it's good news. And this has come from government. And as I say, it's going to make a big difference to a lot of sporting organisations' lives. But there are others then on the sidelines who are looking on saying, right, okay, this is great, we'll benefit from this, but what about us? Some of those messages have been coming in, and one reads, "Hi Greg, why is there no funding for the home help at the minute? I know quite a few people in Letterkenny Hospital that can't get home because there's no home support carers. Also carers, I know it was touched on last week about the waiting list in Donegal, absolute disgrace, and that is a budgeting funding issue. Just to recap, you know, we have people waiting on enhanced home care packages. They've been told indefinitely that you've been okayed for these enhancements, but you're not getting them because the money's run out. And there is also quite a significant waiting list for home care packages here in Donegal. The total is in and around 250. Conversely, elsewhere in the likes of Dublin, zero wait times. In relation to funding for bus escorts, we're still waiting. I emailed Norma Foley 5 times, extensive and detailed emails. I got standard generic replies, and then bingo, her personal secretary responded and informed me that Minister Foley was looking into it and would revert. 3 months later, I got the same information from Páraic McLoughlin, and Saoirse Clark, the education spokesperson, got in the door when they tried to get it moved ahead. So disappointed and so disrespectful to us as a group of people doing amazing work all over the country. Another handful of my colleagues emailed Minister Foley's office about 10 days ago and all got standard replies. The department told us way before the summer it would be sorted by September. Now that's gone to the end of the year. $13.40 per hour, no increase in 6 years. Last increase, 7 cents an hour. What's to study? In the event of your visiting this subject on your show, I'll nominate someone other than myself to speak, as I am otherwise tied up. Okay, we'll reach out to you, and I'll reach out to you again, of course. This caller goes on to say that even Sinn Féin seems to have given up the ghost, which, as I say, that's a person's passionate view. I'm not saying it's all true, but that's their feeling, so it's true to them. Big news for upwards of 100 sporting clubs and organisations around the county revealed last night. Local allocations, €9.2 million, and there's a whole host, far too extensive a list, 78 in fact, to go through. Donegal Regional grant a further close on €3 million. The ATU Donegal Gym Extension, almost €500,000 there. Ballyshannon Leisure Centre, €190,000. For Finn Valley AC, campus development there, €500,000. And on it goes for smaller, I'll just pick out some of these, for smaller organisations. A Ballybuffet Snorlaugh Golf Club, €181,000 for a fairway mower and to develop natural playing surface. Buncrana GEA all-weather playing area, €160,000. As I say, I'm just picking some out here. Dunlow GEA Club, they're getting €118,000 for the installation of floodlights. Neve Nalia, €170,000 for work on their facilities. Deal Harps Football Club, construction of dressing rooms, toilets and showers, €200,000. More for Donegal Golf Club, that's Merver, of course. €113,000 for a sustainable future. Glenay United Football Club, €85,000 for pitch development there. Floodlights at Glenswilly GEA Club as well, €130,000. And on it goes, as I say, 78 of those. There's been a broad welcome, of course, from those within government, as it is the government that announced these. Amongst them, Pat the Cope Gallagher, who's a candidate for Fianna Fáil in the upcoming election for the Dáil. I mean, we've done quite well out of sports capital grants in the past. Pat, a particularly favourable allocation this year.
Yeah, I believe this is to be the largest allocation of grants to the various clubs throughout the county, from Gaelic soccer, community centres, golf, clubhouses, floodlights, athletic tracks, and of course I do believe that it wouldn't be as successful, despite the money that's available, if not for the professional attitude of all of the clubs. Now, so different from years ago when there were paper applications, now the applications have to go in online, and it's just not a simple process, but it's full credit to the clubs who do it so professionally. And of course, they have to ensure their planning permission in advance. There's title in relation to the land, and of course, they must have funding themselves themselves to get over the first stage before the first drawdown of funds from the department.
And that's a big part of it, isn't it? As you say, you know, these clubs and organisations, incredibly professional, have gone through the application process. They are successful, but often then, if not exclusively, it requires local fundraising and the efforts of volunteers in the community who really are the lifebloods of our communities. They have to do their lifting as well.
Yes, of course, and you have to prove to the department that there is funding available to commence the work, whether it's by way of funds that are raised or by way of bank loans or credit union loans. It's all so professional, and I think it's a great credit to all of those who have secured funds at this time. As you've said, over almost 12 million when you take the regional allocations into consideration. It's exceptional, and of course sport is so important. There's a health factor to it as well, and anyone who's involved in sport, then I do believe that they're much healthier as a result of it. And it's just not as it was in the old days when it was adults who were involved. There are children now from a very early age. There's facilities being provided for them by all of these clubs.
Yeah, not necessarily to be negative, but maybe to sort of source advice. Obviously, as you've mentioned, not everyone was successful. Amongst them, Kildrum Tigers, a representative contacted me to say, I'm interested to know how the sports capital grants work. We put in an application. It took an immense amount of work and effort from us as volunteers to put the application together, and we were awarded nothing. We're based in St. Johnston, which would be a very disadvantaged area. We didn't ask for much, just enough to help drain our training pitch to the amount of 30,000. I'd be most grateful if you could let me know what exactly we have done wrong and why we haven't been awarded anything. We are doing our utmost to build a future for the children in our area, with a huge focus at the moment on building girls' football. To say we are disappointed is an understatement. As I say, I'm not asking you necessarily, Pat, to comment, you know, specifically on that case, but have you any advice or I presume you've sympathy for those at Kildrum Tigers,
of course,
example?
Of course, and that's very understandable that Kildrum Tigers are disappointed. But my advice to them would be to contact the department's office in Kerry and to ascertain from them why they fell short. And I believe that the minister should then allow a review for applications that fell short. And I certainly will be making that case to Minister Thomas Byrne at the first opportunity. And I will certainly mention Kildrum Tigers, but I think the initiative has to be taken by themselves. And then we can, with other public representatives, we can pursue this.
Yeah, so in other words, engage with the decision makers, find out why it was unsuccessful, and if you can build on it from there, do so through the likes of your offices. That's what your advice would be, effectively.
Well, of course, yeah. I'm not back in public office yet, but I'm a candidate now.
I'm a candidate now,
and I certainly will be happy to work with any that club or indeed any other clubs who weren't successful.
Okay, thanks very much for that. That's Fianna Fáil candidate Pat the Cope Gallagher. John McNulty is a Fine Gael candidate in the forthcoming general election as well. And of course, John, you know, you're coming from this from a political perspective, but also with your strong sporting background, you can see the benefit this will have to the many GEA clubs and other sporting organisations across the county.
That's right, Greg. I think it's great news for the county and for all the successful clubs, especially across the whole county, because it's huge in my mind. Obviously, I'm big in sport and I like nearly every sport, but I see the value in it all, especially when you look at Donegal and you see the weather and everything that we have. There's a lot of facilities that are needed during the wet weather, and I suppose the long nights and the floodlights and the weather pitches and AstroTurfs and all that are great for everybody, because it means that we can work on it all year, whatever you're doing in your fitness level or whatever you want to do. And again, as I say, the mental and physical well-being of people, you know, you can't underestimate what sport brings to that. And it's not even the sport. Sometimes it's just the enjoyment that's with it and the meeting up with people. And it's a whole community. So I think it's wonderful news for the county. And I would like that to continue from every year, that and everybody to improve their facilities and that we can be top class with everything that we do in the county.
All right, John, I appreciate your time as well. I do. But a caller says, This is ridiculous. These men are not elected and are on claiming this is good news, like they had something to do with this allocation of this money. They are not in government and played no part in securing this money and securing this money. It's false advertising on their behalf. I'm sure you made representations, John, did you?
Oh, well, I mean, all I'm really doing today is welcoming the funding. You know, obviously, I'm not claiming it, or I wouldn't try to claim anything. The work goes into all the people that really put in the hard work, the application forms, and done that hard work at the grassroots to get that in. And that's very welcome news for those people. And I'm just delighted for them. And all really I'm doing is just welcoming the funding for the county. And I think it's great for everybody that was successful. And as I said, just to touch on the people we say that weren't successful, look, I think maybe Pat alluded to it there, that, you know, if they want to get in touch with me or get in touch with us, I mean, we could see what the situation was regarding the application form, and maybe was there something that was left out or what the story was, and find out for them and see is it possible that something could be got for them under appeal.
All right, thanks very much for that. John McNulty is a Fine Gael candidate in the forthcoming election for the Dáil. And obviously I understand where some people are coming in with comments, funding for sports clubs, and yet we can't find funding for teachers like Finn. Can someone explain this to me? I'm afraid it's beyond I. Terman, they are getting 170,000 for a gym studio project. Neve Michael, floodlighting, goalposts and a ball stop, 173 grand. Kilmacrannan Community Development Company, modular building dressing rooms, phase one of that, 170,000. 75,000 for Letterkenny Rovers, 20 grand for Milford Hall Committee. Moville Celtic Football Club, 160,000 euro. No Barriers Foundation, 160,000 for a community inclusion gym refurbishment. Satanta Hurling Club, pitch development, 131,000. Finn Harps Cooperative Society for an artificial pitch to help girls soccer in schools, 394,000. Bundoran Golf Club, 40 grand. Neve Podrick GA Club, 25 grand for physio, coaches, school board and lawnmower. And on it goes. Okay, that's that. And what a day to love Donegal, but we love Donegal all year round, don't we? And Love Donegal Day is running today in association with Donegal County Council. Together we can share what makes Donegal special throughout the world by using the hashtag Love Donegal. Donegal Abu. Now, the key here is that, you know, what can we do? It's very simple. Just post a lovely picture, post a lovely comment, whatever it might be, on any of your social media platforms, from TikTok to Instagram to Facebook, and use the hashtag Love Donegal, Dunanal Abu. And it's all part of Love Donegal Day, and it's part of celebrating what's good about our county and getting the message out across the world. It's an important day in the calendar for the region. It gives everyone with a connection to Donegal an opportunity to enjoy, celebrate and love Donegal. And throughout the day, we're going to be crossing to different parts of our beautiful county. We're going to be going over to Donegal Airport a little later on in the programme. Corinne is there. We'll link in with her and chat to guests at around about 10:45, and also a little later on the north, around the northwest, the team will be out and about, and also on Jive Time around the country. So take a picture, share a story, whatever it might be, across any of your social medias, but please use the hashtags either or both, hashtag Love Donegal or hashtag Dunanal Abu. And in the past, these hashtags have trended right around the world. And what that means is that your pictures, your comments, your whatever you post about what you love about this county reaches people in all four corners of the world. So I think it's a great thing to be involved in. Barry is with me now. Hiya, Barry.
Hiya, Greg.
Thanks for joining us. Right, Barry, you sent us an email, didn't you, as it relates to, well, I don't know how to frame it. It seems to be just the government's use of public funds.
It is, yeah. It is. It's just listening to the Cam Collier the last day, talking, Greg, about how they were embarrassed and that they would learn from their mistakes, and the same old, we'll learn from our mistakes thing. In the letter or in the email I sent you, it was basically outlining a few of their overspends, like the children's hospital, 540 million, your unused PPE gear of 450 million, unused voting machines of 55 million, storage for them machines of 14 million, printers at 808,000 that don't fit into a building, bike sheds at 336,000. It's it's just it's an apology after apology every time they make these mistakes. And I, what I was saying in the email is, any other walk of life or any other job that you would have, if you make a mistake of that magnitude, you're gone, you're sacked, you're not there anymore.
And it's often the case, Barry, that we have to learn after the fact. Like, would we ever have known about the bike shed if someone hadn't found the information and published it? Would there ever have been an apology? Would there ever have been an investigation into how we can spend, you know, over €300,000 on a bike shed that actually doesn't really protect bikes from the elements? You know, it's often, you know, talking about things after the fact because we got found out.
It is, yeah, and it's also that whenever they make the apology, it's times you make an apology whenever it's a mistake, Greg, but a mistake is something that you do by accident. That's, to me, that's, it's like organised corruption. Who in their right mind gives the go-ahead for a bike shed to be built at $336,000?
I mean, obviously, you know, everything you've said up until now, many people would agree with you, but you also will look at this from a different perspective because you're looking at this level of irresponsible spending at the same time as having to deal with being a victim of the defective concrete block crisis. And does that make it more difficult for you, do you think?
It does. It makes it more unbearable. Like, them few mistakes, as they call them, them few mistakes that they have made, Greg, there are over €1 billion worth of mistakes. €1 billion. Mm-hmm. Like, you're talking about 2,000 homes of mistakes. 2,000 homes, not houses, homes. Yet they put everybody through, jumping through hoops and worrying about whether they can afford to rebuild a house. And even taking the defective concrete part out of it, the homelessness, €1 billion would go a long, long way, Greg, and sorting a lot of the homeless problem out.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, I do think it's corruption. It is corruption because there's no other way to look at it. If you're paying $336,000 for a bike shed that a company down the country has said they would use the same materials and do the same job for $40,000. It's corruption. It's given. It's cronyism.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I'm taking your point of view. I'm not necessarily agreeing with you. That's not my job. I'm just trying to tease out the views with you. As you say, you know, you're one of those who I presume there's a shortfall for you. And then when you look at this, you know, relatively modest bike shed, and you think that could provide you and probably four or five others with a return of your family home with no actual cost to use as victims of this, blame-free victims. That would be sicken me, I think.
Oh, yeah, it would. Like, we know that we're going to be, when we do, we have been given the go-ahead for demolition and we have been given our granted amount. But we also know that we're going to have to come up with between 70 and 100,000 to rebuild our house. As you say, that bike shed, for an extra 60,000, they're expecting us to build our house on top of the price of that bike shed. It doesn't make sense. And that is what angered me whenever the apology from Cancolia is what angered me, because I just thought, there's apology after apology. There's years of apologies, and they just keep doing the same thing. And expect the public to pick up bull for everything.
And you seem to have a distrust in the ability to responsibly spend the likes of the $13 billion.
Yeah, 13, and they say plus interest. So you're looking at €16 billion. Can you trust a group of people who spend $336,000 on a $40,000 job to allocate $16 billion? It would seriously worry me as to what they're going to do with it.
Mm, okay.
Because they obviously have their contractor friends and contractor groups that they give these jobs out to, and are guaranteed by the looks of things to get these jobs no matter what their price is. So yeah, that would worry me. Whenever there's 16 billion there, that would sort a lot of problems out. They've always talked about the defective lock problem going to cost 3 billion. If government were in charge of it, it would cost a lot more than that. But at 3 billion out of that 16 billion would sort out all of nearly all of the problem that is in Donegal with defective concrete. But they won't do that. They're saying they're going to spend it in infrastructure. The infrastructure
Infrastructure, but I do take your point. Barry, listen, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. I understand your frustration. Some will agree, others will disagree, but that's a democracy and we can have our views. Thanks, Barry. That's Barry there, very frustrated. Frustrated is a word, but you know what I mean, with the situation. Right, just before we head towards the news at 10, Greg, when is the yellow box going to be put on the roundabout at the Mountain Top? It won't stop bad drivers, but it might help. It's constantly blocked by traffic coming from the Kilmacrenan area into Letterkenny, and they refuse to stop and sit on the roundabout blocking it. And of course, you have this complication of three lanes effectively trying to go into one. Actually, it's four lanes effectively trying to go into one. There have been proposals to put yellow box on roundabouts. I'm not sure if it was that one, but certainly the one below Mountain Top here in the past, and they were rejected. The TI looked at it and didn't think it was the right thing to do. So I would say don't hold your breath unless something's happened between now and then that I don't know about. Right, it is your 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We're going to take a break for the news and obituary notices. I'll chat to you after those.